Welcome back, everybody, to the Davenport Pulse. Today, we are joined by Sergeant Jonathan Douglas, Supervisor of SVU at the Davenport Police Department. He is with us for our Veterans Day special episode. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
All right. So what we typically do before we dive into questions is ask our guests to tell us a little bit about themselves.
All right. Well, I've been here at Davenport for a little over 9 years now. Before that, I was a police officer in Florida for almost 10. And before that, 6 years in the Air Force. I am married, have a 5-year-old boy, and I love to fish.
Oh, we could get along great. Okay. So you talked a little bit about how you were in the Air Force. So can you let us know what kind of led you to that path?
I think a few things. My family has a history of military service. At least from what I'm told from the matriarchs and patriarchs of my family, we've had someone in pretty much every war since the Revolutionary War from my family. I was also in ROTC, junior ROTC in high school, Air Force ROTC, which kind of leaned me towards the Air Force portion of it. And I always wanted to be a police officer, too. I remember my mom buying me a Halloween costume when I was, I couldn't have been 5 or 6 years old, and it was a policeman uniform for Halloween, and I wore that thing every year until it was up to my knees. And she finally made me get rid of it. And that's kind of what started me down the path, I think.
How old were you when you joined?
18.
18 years old.
So what made you want to go into the Air Force over becoming a police officer right away?
Well, anyone in their right mind usually wouldn't hire an 18-year-old with no experience or no further education as a police officer, at least not at the larger departments, I wouldn't think anyway. And I also had a desire to actually join the service, too. My family, most of them had done it. I was in ROTC, which kind of pushed me a little bit further with it. I wanted to get out. I grew up in Rock Island, and I kind of wanted to see the world. And that's, then I went and signed the line and gave the oath, and there I went.
Can you tell us a little bit about that 6 years that you were in the service?
Sure. So I spent, after basic training in Texas, I spent about a year and a half at F.E. Warren, Wyoming, which is a nuclear missile base. Never visit, never go. It's awful. There's nothing out there but missiles and a few people running around in the woods, or in the fields, I should say. There's no trees. After that, I spent a year in Korea, then got a nice posting at MacDill Air Force Base, then immediately got deployed to Kyrgyzstan, and then back to MacDill Air Force Base, and that was the end of my military service.
How did you to become a Florida police officer?
In transition,
yeah. Because you grew up in Quad Cities, but you ended up in Florida for 10 years.
Right. So,
did you confuse the Davenports?
I did not. But I know there is a Davenport, Florida.
Yeah.
So as I was nearing the end of my enlistment, I had some friends, and I was security forces in the Air Force, which is kind of like stateside law enforcement overseas. It's more of air-based defense, ground defense type thing. I had a few friends at MacDill Air Force Base that were transitioning out and becoming civilian police officers in the area. And Florida had a program, or I don't know if they still do, but they had a program where you could apply for a transition from military law enforcement to civilian law enforcement, if, as long as you'd meet certain training criteria, which I researched it and I had. And the Air Force actually paid for me to go take a civilian certification course to become a certified police officer in Florida while I was still in the Air Force. And from there, a few friends of mine had gone to work for the Plant City Police Department. I applied and was hired about 2 months before I got out, and I was down there for almost 10 years.
Where is Plant City at?
Just outside of Tampa, Florida.
Okay, so right in the middle.
Yes, very hot.
Mm-hmm.
So then what, after 10 years, did you just want to come home? Or what made you decide, okay, it's time to go back to Iowa?
I had always wanted to come back home eventually, family and friends, all that. I met my wife in Florida. She was a probation officer at the time. She's an attorney now. But as that 8 or 9 year point was getting close, it was kind of time for me to think, well, it's time to go or stay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do 15 years somewhere and then go start all over again. It doesn't transfer. So I applied to Davenport. At the time, there were tons of applicants. I think when I applied, there must have been 300, 400 applicants for one or two positions. And after almost a year, I got a phone call and was picked up by Davenport.
How long have you been with the Davenport Police Department?
It was 9 years, July 7th, I believe, of this year.
And now you are a supervisor of the SVU?
Yes.
Can you talk about your path on how you got there?
So at my previous department, I was a patrol officer, field training officer. I ran the honor guard down there. SWAT or EST for seven or eight years down there. Then the last 2 years, I worked some undercover work with a special investigations unit. When I came to Davenport, I was starting all over again, so I'd made my mind up. I was going to do whatever I could to try and make up that lost time. So as soon as I hit the ground at Davenport, I tried to do whatever I could, for lack of better words, prove myself as being able to do the job and do it well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As soon as I could apply for it to be a field training officer at Davenport, I did that. Got on the honor guard as soon as I could. Applied for promotion, applied for criminal investigations to become a detective, did that. And after being promoted to sergeant, went back to patrol. Did a couple years back on patrol, and a position came open with the Special Victims Unit, which is where I worked as a detective previously at Davenport. And I really believe in the work and believe it's really advocating for victims that don't have a voice. Mm-hmm. And applied, and luckily I was selected for the position.
What has been your favorite position in Davenport that you've like been involved in or currently involved in?
Probably, I love patrol. I love the different, the scenery changing every day. It's always something different, a different call every 5 minutes. However, the job that I think has meant the most to me on a personal level is on a personal level, a Special Victims Unit. Mm-hmm. A lot of the victims that we deal with in these cases are children, children that can't fight for themselves, can't speak up for themselves. And if someone doesn't do it, then no one will. So I take that responsibility personally as far
thank
as what
you.
We do.
Yeah. Thank you. Can you tell us about some of the special people you met with your time serving? Do you keep in contact with any of those people today?
It's a funny thing about that. So there's no one that I can really, it would take me all day to single everybody out. That's one thing I really loved about the military. Every posting, every base you went to, you developed a very close-knit family with those in your unit, those you serve with. I still remember the names of my best friends from every single base or posting or deployment I was ever on. And many of them I haven't talked to in 20 years plus, but I'm also confident if I called them tomorrow and said, hey, Justin, want to go grab a beer? Mm-hmm. They'd be on the next flight up, or I'd be on the next flight down to go see them wherever they might be at this point.
Right.
There is one, Pat Kelleher. We were stationed at MacDill Air Force together, MacDill Air Force Base together, deployed to Kyrgyzstan together, got sent back to MacDill Air Force Base together. And then we both went to work for Plant City Police, and he was my zone partner for 4 years.
Oh, wow.
So
that's pretty neat.
And I still talk to him on a, not a regular basis, but we catch up every now and again.
Yeah.
He's probably, I don't want to go to Iowa, so.
No, he's in Boston, and he has no desire to come to Iowa at all.
Yeah. Are there any, like, funky cuisines that you've tried or and loved or hated?
I'm pretty sure I ate pigeon and rat when I was in Korea, but I'm not sure 100%. They said it was chicken, but I have my doubts.
Rat.
We had firefighter Zach on the podcast, and he said he ate camel and
goat.
Lots
of goat.
I've had goat, never had camel.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like a fine
I know, cuisine. I asked him, what did it taste like? And he said, crap.
Not good.
It was not good.
I think the best I ever had, and it was in Korea, was spicy beef bulgogi. And I don't know how they make it, and I have not been able to find it in 20 years plus. My wife has even like searched everywhere trying to find any place that serves this and serves it well. Mm-hmm. But I ate that 2-3 times a day for a year and never got tired of it.
Oh, that's good.
Is there a special memory or something about your time that sticks with you?
Yeah. When I was in Korea is when the September 11th attacks happened. Initially, we didn't know what was happening, just that the base was going haywire, people running everywhere. I remember armored personnel carriers, old armored personnel carriers, probably from Vietnam era that hadn't run in forever, were being started up and cranked and rolling down the streets on base. They were sending people to the all the main gates and all the fighting positions that are these concrete pre-prepared little boxes you sit in case the base is attacked, they're trying to defend it. F-16s were lined up, and they were getting them off the ground as quickly as they could in case there was an impending attack from North Korea, which we still, most of us on the ground, thought that was what was happening. We didn't know what had happened back in New York. And for us, it was 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock or later at night. But a memory that has stuck with me, well,
yeah,
ever since.
Right.
So how long was it until you figured it out and, like, stuff, I don't want to say calmed down, but you guys were able to get your bearings and grasp more what was happening? I know you couldn't let your guard down because you didn't know how everyone was going to respond to you guys, but at what point did you guys learn of what had happened?
So they were pretty good about actually trying to get around to the positions to try and tell people what was actually going on, and actually made it a point to try and relieve people in small groups to go and call their families to let them know that they were okay, because obviously people stateside didn't know what was happening overseas.
Right.
Yeah. So, but we were out there on post for a couple of days, I think, before we were relieved to actually go sleep. Or, I mean, they brought out food to us and all that, but it was a long few days.
Right.
How many people were on your base?
At Osan?
Yeah. Like, how big is it?
It's massive. It's actually a joint U.S. Air Force and South Korean Air Force base.
Okay.
But it's a huge base. There must have been, and I'm wildly guessing here, but way over 10,000 people, wow, including families, too.
So it's not the arsenal size.
No, it was a huge, huge base.
Yeah.
That gives a kind of like a somewhat of a visual to us. Not really, but.
What advice would you give to a young person thinking of enlisting?
I would say it takes considerable forethought, and you really need to think about what you're signing up for. I don't for a second regret a single minute of my service, and I wouldn't change it if I could go back. But it's something that you have to be dedicated to and prepared for the eventuality that you may be called to serve somewhere other than a base here in the States or some nice base in Europe. The world has a tendency to fall apart at exactly the time when you don't want it to, as we can see from the news right now. And mentally, you have to be in a place that you can be prepared to do what's expected of you should the worst happen, not just for you and your country, but for those next to the left and to the right of you. Mm-hmm. In those situations, it doesn't really matter where you are, what the politics are, the situation. It's just keeping the person next to you okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the day you enlisted?
I do remember parts of it. I remember being in a room with a bunch of people in their civilian clothes, which is what they called rainbows, when I remember when I got to basic training. And everyone that showed up in civilian clothes was rainbows because everyone knew it was your first day. Mm-hmm. But I remember being sworn in, then going to the airport, and there was getting on the plane. All of us was nervous but jovial. Mm-hmm. And when we landed in Texas, when we got off the plane, there were already instructors in the airport waiting for us with their drill instructor, drill sergeant hats on. And we got on the bus, and they made it quite clear that we weren't to speak, weren't to talk. And we arrived at Lackland Air Force Base early in the morning, and basic training began.
Okay, so that was, you know, your first day. Did you sign your senior year of high school then?
Yeah, I did the delayed entry program, which I think I actually signed up to go in just after or just before graduating, but it was delayed until August of 1999 when I actually left for basic training.
Do you remember, like, your parents' reaction when you told them, like, Mom, Dad, this is what I'm doing?
Yes, my mother was supportive, but obviously nervous. I think she would have preferred that I had gone to college or, mm-hmm, you know, not being deployed somewhere. Of course, at the time, there were no wars going on or anything like that, so that probably helped with my mom. My dad was supportive of it. I think he was nervous, too, but on my father's side of the family, especially, there's a long line of military service. So,
was your dad enlisted in the Air Force as well?
No, actually, my father wasn't in the military. My uncles were, they were both in the Gulf War in 1993 era, around there. My grandfather in the Korean War, a few in Vietnam, then World War II, World War I, and so on and so forth all the way back.
Okay, I have one more final question. How did your experience when you were in the service, how does that impact your life today or affect who you are, how you are today?
I think it's impacted it only in positive ways. What I mean by that is when I was 18, I mean, how many 18-year-olds have a whole lot of direction and know exactly what they're doing? I would argue not a whole lot.
Right.
I agree. The military forced me to quickly learn to prioritize, to take thought in what I was doing, to care about what I was doing, and to care that I was doing a good job with it. And that's really served me through most of my life, not doing things at a half measure, but doing it all the way, not being happy until a product is completed, whatever that product may be, as best as you can get it done. It's not going to be perfect almost ever, but it's going to be the best that I can get it. And loyalty to friends, loyalty to what I'm doing, and well, I think moreover, I think that's when I decided that if I spend the rest of my life, whatever career that's going to be, it's going to be something that I'll be proud of and feel like it's bigger than me. And I think that kind of led a lot to where I am present day. So,
absolutely.
It's incredible. Yeah. Sergeant Douglas, thank you so much for joining us today. It was awesome to get to know you and hear about your story. Thank you so much. And thank you for your service.
Thank you. It was good to be here.